And they know my passion in the sport. They know my they know my admiration for the younger generation and trying to make opportunities for them. So that's what it was at the at Live for Life Gym in St. Louis when I started coaching. That's what it was at 24 years old when I created the first and only weightlifting program of its kind that gave scholarships and grants to kids all throughout the world, not just the United States.
When's the last time you actually thought about your life insurance and if it's the right one for you? Hello, world. Uncharted Performance is sponsored by Health IQ, a life insurance company that helps athletes and coaches like us, CrossFitters, weightlifters, endurance athletes, and strongman competitors, to name a few, get lower rates on their life insurance. They use actual science and data and not the outdated BMI, for example, to secure lower rates on life insurance. For us, 56% of Health IQ customers have saved between 40 to 33% on their life insurance. And who doesn't like a little extra cash and a greater peace of mind? And on top of that, Health IQ is also the official life insurance partner of USA Weightlifting. Does a typical life insurer consider that you're doing the CrossFit Open, running triathlons, snatching 275 pounds, or just taking the simple steps to get healthier and fitter by the day? Unfortunately, they don't consider the fact that you train and lift weights and you are actually getting healthier and you will live longer. To work with someone that does and to support the show and see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/uncharted or mention the promo code uncharted when you talk to a Health IQ agent. Welcome back, beautiful people, to another incredible episode of Uncharted Performance. It is actually another beautiful and sunny day here in Cleveland. A little bit cooler, but we will definitely take it in late March, early April. If you guys have been tuning in to the most recent episodes of Uncharted Performance, you might have heard or become familiar with our new segment, Profiles in Uncharted, sponsored by the wonderful team at Azoth over at seekingazoth.com. And essentially what that has been, and it is lending a voice to quote unquote ordinary, but we believe they are not. We actually think they're extraordinary individuals who might not have a voice, and we are lending that to them. So if you know of anyone that is a family, a friend, somebody maybe that you train with that has overcome incredible challenging circumstances and is essentially kicking ass and taking names, please let us know. And you can hit me up at contact@unchartedperformance.com and send us your story, send us their story. What we have done in the past, it usually takes about it's about a 5 to 7 minute segment previous to the actual conversation with the guest, with the featured guest. But today's a little different. Today's guest is essentially a profile in Uncharted, and you will hear soon hear why. But again, our podcast, the segment is brought to you by Azoth 2.0 from Azoth and seekingazoth.com. Make sure you jump over to that website and use the code Uncharted for 10% off. And you might be thinking, if you haven't heard again past episodes, what is Azoth 2.0? It is a beautiful nootropic supplement that is the ultimate productivity formula. And I use it on a regular basis. It is something that I turn to. It is a natural supplement that helps me get extra energy, motivation, and focus. I tend to dabble in a lot of things at once. And sometimes, as my lovely and beautiful wife often tells me, probably too many things at once. But Azoth is, again, the ultimate productivity formula. They contain patented ingredients that increase energy, focus, motivation, right when you need it. It is, I've compared it in the past to the drug that Bradley Cooper takes in the movie Limitless, and it is exactly that. Once it gets going, the sun gets brighter, the music gets sharper, everything comes into focus without any kind of crashes, jitters, tolerance buildup, or withdrawals. What it does, it provides a reduction in cortisol, increases blood flowing and oxygen to the brain, and again, gives you that energy that when you might be down or just not with it that day, it is the perfect go-to. And again, I highly recommend it. So jump over to seekingazoth.com and use the code UNCHARTED, all caps, for 10% off. And now to this week's guest. For episode 90, we are joined by a national champ, record holder, international team member, international coach, level 5 for USA weightlifting, Derek Johnson. He has produced national champions, team titles, world team members, and Olympian, but that is just scratching the surface. He takes us on a fascinating journey, and that's an understatement, from growing up in around poverty and crime, and in poverty and around crime in St. Louis, to rolling the dice and starting over and reinventing himself in Los Angeles, opening up the amazing nonprofit, more recently providing opportunity and access to those that might not have the access and opportunity to pursue the beautiful sport of Olympic weightlifting, the Kings of Weightlifting. Our conversation is littered with first, quote unquote, and breaking down barriers, starting with his recent trip to compete in Iran, where he took gold. And make sure to take a tally during our conversation of how many firsts Derek has accomplished. But that is more recent. Derek has gone through multiple injuries, heartbreak, devastation, steady use of painkillers in the past, more pain and trauma. However, through it all, he has continued to work on himself and maintain the best mindset for himself and those he coaches by reminding himself of what is good and what he has accomplished and will in the future. His is a story, that he's writing for himself, and it is definitely far from over. And please make sure to visit kingsofweightlifting.com, follow them on social media, and support the great work that Derek and his team are doing, as well as cheer him on as he competes in the very near future. And if you need any of the links, if you forget to write them down, if you're driving or anything like that, for Derek or for Kings, please visit the episode page on chartedperformance.com for all those links. For me, it was definitely a true honor. Derek was one of the first weightlifters I was introduced to or learned about when I started following and participating in Olympic weightlifting 6 years ago. And it was, again, a true honor and a great conversation with one of the most decorated Olympic weightlifters in USA history. And as always, if you find the information valuable and the conversation entertaining, please take a moment to share and consider leaving a rating and review on iTunes. And with that, here is Derek Johnson. Enjoy, guys. Derek, thank you very much for coming on the Uncharted Performance podcast. It is an honor and a privilege to have you. How are you?
Pretty good. Thanks for having me on.
Trust us. It's definitely, again, our pleasure. You were one of the first Olympic weightlifters that I was introduced to when I got into the CrossFit Olympic weightlifting space about 6 years ago. So this is kind of an unreal moment for me. I did not include that in the notes, but I just want to keep that a secret. So kind of a little bit of a fanboy moment. But what I want to start off with is not necessarily, Olympic weightlifting as a sport, but something that's come out of it, and that is Kings of Weightlifting. And if you could take maybe a few minutes to talk about what Kings of Weightlifting is, its purpose, and how we can support it.
So Kings of Weightlifting is this free after-school program I just started in South Central Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And in that area of L.A., of Los Angeles, is one of the poorest areas in all of the state of California, one of the highest crime rates. And the thought behind that was, you know what, based off my circumstances and how I grew up in St. Louis, I would probably be from this particular area.
Okay.
And so that's why I was trying to open up a facility. And on January 8th of this year, 2018, I opened it up. So it's a 501c3 nonprofit. Kids can go there absolutely for free. We take care of shoes, membership fees, entry fees, uniforms, shirts, flights, hotels, everything that it would take for this kid to be competitive at that. And it was all about just giving that community an opportunity. And so when you're in the inner city or in the ghettos, you're limited on opportunities. And so somebody like me, who's a senior international level coach, meaning I'm eligible to coach at the Olympics, most people will probably say, oh yeah, he should probably open up a gym in Beverly Hills or West Hollywood or Santa Monica. It just would be normal if I did something like that. Uh-huh. And I say, you know what? No. I'm going to open up a gym for free for kids in this community. Actually, not even kids, because if you message me, you can come train with me also, no matter what age you are. Okay. But then, of course, after that, I go right into coaching. So I also train at the King's Weightlifting. So I'm building a facility, really, that is great for me. And so it's just really going to – so all these kids in this community know is, like, Illico weights and just banners hanging all over the walls and just the nicest equipment, nicest products. We have a lot of partnerships and things with different companies.
That's beautiful, and congratulations, and thank you for doing something like that, because you don't see that happen very often in whatever sport it is.
Yeah, well, and that's what I hope to, like, change, I guess, as we go forward and we get more media. And just a little bit on my backstory, when I started in the sport 21 years ago, I started at this after-school inner-city program, free weightlifting program for kids. And at that point, it was just all about having fun. But me, I was a competitor, and I wanted to win. I thought that would be the way that maybe I would be able to get out of the ghetto and see more of the world. And so at that program, which was started in 1988, I came there in 97, but I would become the first youth national champion, the first junior national champion, the first senior national champion, the first international team member for that program. And now you would see kids from that same program make international meets. I don't know if you know my brothers or not, the Barnes brothers. I started coaching when they were 10. They're 24 now. But Darren in the 56 is the only American lifter to break 9 records in one competition, that being the youth, junior, and the senior American records.
Wow.
In one competition.
That's impressive. Why do you think?
And his twin brother also holds junior American records.
Okay.
Our mother is the only mother in the United States who has 2 kids that has double body weight snatches. And the third child was only 2 kilos off of having a double body weight snatch.
How is it for the mom to have that, to experience that?
Well, she's been really big into what my younger brothers were doing. Okay. So even when they were competing originally, our mother and their father would see them compete all the time. She actually has never seen me compete.
Will she ever get a chance to?
I hope so.
Okay. This is an interesting topic for me, because it's I came out of the Cleveland city school system. Which is definitely it's lower income, right. Obviously not as well supported by the administration and whatever the legislation and the issues that might be there, right. And obviously the opportunities are not there, so even sports are limited. I remember, you know.
Well, think about, not to interrupt, but think about what's going on in the lower income schools. The first that are being hit, They're cutting sports.
Yeah,
I'm sorry.
Exactly.
They've already cut a lot of after school sports programs. Now, art programs are being cut. So you're seeing the arts that are starting to run out. So that's why after school program is just so important all around the country. And King's Weightlifting is not just weightlifting. We come in there, the first thing the kids come in and say, I either have homework or I don't have homework, because that's the first thing I'm going to ask about is school. So you can see me in the gym doing homework with the kids, working on whatever subjects, hopefully the ones that I'm better at. If not, I get another coach that's better in the particular topic, and they go over and help. And this is all why maybe we're coaching, and we just swap it out, and we'll go over here. We have a desk in the gym where they can do their homework. We play board games after the workout, sometimes during. It just depends on what the flow is. Or more important than that, we talk to the kids, like just to see how their day going, whatever it is they want to talk about, which is like an understatement. Because a lot of the programs you see, well, okay, there is in and out, workout, home. No. This is more like a family that we're building here. And another thing that I did want to do, because it's all about, I'm trying to strengthen the community. And so it's all about not taking the kids out of that community for this particular after school program. Because of course I've trained in West Hollywood, Santa Monica, and Venice here in Los Angeles, and I didn't want to bring them out there. I said, you know what? I'm going to them.
Okay, so essentially lowering the barrier to entry, which is awesome.
Right. And just going back to what you were saying about the Cleveland public schools, and I went from kindergarten to eighth grade in the St. Louis public schools, and it's just definitely their challenges
Yeah,
where you
so
see the. Go ahead.
exactly. So speaking of that, because I've personally had, several conversations with some of the kind of the local athletes and people that have been involved in nonprofits and trying to start them up and maybe introduce something similar to Kings of Weightlifting here in Cleveland. So just kind of based on your experience in getting that going, and any major obstacles or challenges you faced in terms of just getting Kings of Weightlifting off the ground?
I've been a part of things from the ground for a while. So
Okay.
the gym I started at in St. Louis, I started Lindenwood University. That was a college program or a Weightlifting college program at that school. And I created it, started it from the ground up. And even today, kids all around the world are able to go there and get scholarships and grants for weightlifting, the only program of its kind. And I started that in 2009. And so this is like another, so this is just like continuing that tradition of like groundbreaking and understanding that when you send an email to someone, they may not respond and you have to follow up, and that's totally fine. Cold calling people. So Kings of Weightlifting, I was probably on the ground in the South Los Angeles, South Central Watts area for about that amount of time before I was able to partner with the Los Angeles Sheriff's Department, because they have a bunch of properties all throughout Los Angeles,
Yeah.
and made it work. So just like just not giving up and expecting someone not to, accepting someone not to return your call or follow up on an email, but you just keep going. So that might have been the toughest part, but hey, that's the name of the game.
No, for sure. Yeah, kind of roll with the punches.
Yeah.
But keep rolling. Speaking of worldwide, you recently had a trip to the Middle East. To Iran. Was that your first time in the Middle East?
Yes. So that was my. Well, actually, so I competed in Turkey. Is Turkey, because I know they were part of the European Union
Union.
or ARB.
Yeah, it's
So
tricky.
I'm not sure. So it depends. So I've been to Turkey, and Turkey is an Islamic
Okay.
government. So I guess I would say my second time,
All right,
but
and
definitely not. It's definitely a difference between the two.
Got it. What did that experience mean to you? And you and your coach, Ursula Garza, who I'm actually a big fan of as well. But you guys accomplished many firsts. What did that mean to for you both?
It was just great to be a part of, and just with all these other programs I've been a part of, everything's about taking advantage of opportunities. And so even when I heard about the Iran trip, I was like, oh, I absolutely want to go to that. That would be huge, especially if you know what's going on in the political climate between the two different countries. And I was just like, well, sports is definitely a great way to get into a place that you would never probably be granted access to get to. And so I've been around, and I understand that women's roles are less prominent in that society. So, you know what my first thing that I said to USA Weightlifting was, for if I was going to go?
No.
That my coach would have to coach me.
Okay, perfect.
Because she's a female. Mm-hmm. And I already know that that's outlawed, that males can't coach males. I'm sorry, males can't coach females, and females can't coach males. So now, enable for me to go, we have to do something that's different from what people see in that society.
How did they respond in Iran?
Everything looked pretty good because and it was kind of like, well, they're Americans, guests of the country. So their society is like, okay, well, we have to treat them well regardless. So mm-hmm. so that was fine. And but even like going to like training halls before we competed, my coach was the first female to even walk in the building. Had ever been in the building. A lot of these training facilities only had restrooms, which didn't have to say men on them because women weren't allowed in the facilities. So it was just things like that. So even along the way, but when we got there, we were greeted by the president of the weightlifting federation. I mean, to the airport when we got there, we were greeted by a lot of people from the federation, the president of the weightlifting federation, and just other dignitaries. When we went to different cities, we met mayors of those cities. One of those, the day before I competed, I went and trained with the Olympic team, bunch of world champions there, record holders and things like that. And once again, you had this dynamic of this female coach coaching this male athlete, and most everybody seemed fine with it. And even that day of training, you had the mayor of the city there, the members of the city council there. So it was a nice like photo opportunity. And it's funny because I'm a political science major and my coach, she got her master's degree in political science. So I don't know how that happened there, but it almost seemed like a political, like, I don't know, like, you're showing the Americans around and things like that.
Yeah,
but
they look good, yeah.
But it was great to be when I went on the trip, I thought it would be a lot of people that wanted to go on the trip. I was nervous that I wouldn't go to the trip because so many people would want to go. I didn't realize that I would be the only one going.
Yeah, that is interesting. Yeah, because were the two of you the only U.S. contingent, basically?
And it was another female referee, or a female referee, Sally, who would be the first female referee in the history of that country to be a referee in the male event.
Wow.
So there were just a lot of things happening there.
That's pretty cool.
So I would be the first American to compete there in 53 years, which was a different world in 1965 in that country, that is. Won gold, live broadcast, and weightlifting is the number one sport in Iran. So I'm like Kobe Bryant over there.
so a little different than the U.S.
It was an actual live broadcast. So now, whenever I stepped out into the streets, I'm constantly taking pictures. They call me the American hero. So that's what they call me over there. And like their equivalent of SportsCenter, they were like breaking. I remember one night they spent 30 minutes talking about me. Just like the magnitude of me being over there.
That's incredible, man. Congratulations.
Thanks.
No, it really does seem like an incredible story, man. Go ahead.
But let me add to this story. So the day before I'm competing, I competed Thursday, March 8th. Mm-hmm. The day before, word came out that women were going to be allowed to attend a male sporting event, which is completely banned in that country. Completely banned. Women cannot attend male sporting events. And I was just ecstatic, like, wow, I'm going to be in the first session. Wow, I'm going to see women in the building. This is great. This is like my political science degree at work right here. And I'm just using it through sports. Kind of like my political science degree. Actually, that's more of what the King's weightlifting is, as opposed to weightlifting. It's just something sports are great for teaching lessons in life and just giving kids goals and things like that to go out there. So I'm fired up. I'm warming up. It's almost competition time. I see females in there. I see girls in there. Oh, this is awesome. Little do I know, before I'm lifting or right as my session starts, they escort the women out.
That's interesting.
All security escorts the women out because there was some paperwork that was needed by the politicians to sign, either the, I don't know if it was the shahs or the imams or, so they were escorted out. This led to like these 8-year-old girls or this 8-year-old girl and this 6-year-old girl outside crying. Pictures were taken of this. Pictures go online. Outrage is happening online. And so I'm competing. I win the gold. I'm doing interviews after that. I'm taking pictures. And I really don't know all what's going on yet. Next day come, we come back to the competition to watch another session. These women are waiting outside to talk to my coach. They said they've been waiting out there for an hour to talk to her. And I was like, wow, that is awesome. And so she's out there talking to them for like 20 minutes. And then I go back in. As I'm going in, they come out with chairs. I didn't know at the time, but my coach is engaging in a silent protest with the women as a show of solidarity. And refuses to go in unless the women are allowed to go in.
So what happened?
So from the day before, we already got outrage growing, online protests. We got ourselves a situation brewing here.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe 45 minutes later, and also the president of the Iranian Weightlifting Federation was also engaged in the silent protest, and he was sitting in the back of the room, and he refused to sit in the VIP areas with the notable people, politicians, and other sports ministers until the women were allowed to come in also, because he wants to see the women compete this year and hopefully that country hosts world championships. So if you're going to host world championships, you're absolutely going to have to relax the hijab rules.
Yeah, for sure, definitely.
Because not every woman is going to come into the country and wear them. You're going to have to desegregate the facilities, because it's either male, like let's say if it was a swimming pool where I was cutting weight at in the sauna, they have times for men and they have times for women. They're not to intermix.
Yeah, that
so
is
about 45 minutes later, after my coach is out, 30, 45 minutes later, you see women walking in, and I'm thinking I'm in there just doing more interviews, taking pictures, and then I see them coming in. Then I ask my coach, I was like, hold on, I thought you guys were just talking outside. She's like, I'll tell you about it later. So then this is when I find out everything that's been happening in the last 24 hours at that point. And oh, this even led to even more. You had one of the most popular soccer players in the country reach out to my coach. Like, I wish we had something like this for soccer. Like, thank you for what you're doing. This goes way past weightlifting. This is really women, like, just you're helping support our movement over here. And you got to think about it, all around Iran, you have women taking off the hijab, women going into soccer stadiums, watching males, which results in them being incarcerated and hit with heavy fines. So this is things that are happening, and now you got a group of us, well, a very small group of us over there, and they're just seeing a completely different dynamic. You're seeing women, and my statement is like, hey, my coach is just as good as any male coach. Well, that's only adding fuel to the fire. You got my coach standing with the women. You got a lot of moving parts here. And so now on the second day of lifting, the women are allowed in there, maybe with about 30 minutes to an hour left in that competition on the second day. Then by the third day, women are in there online and still going crazy. Like the people that are progressive women fired up online. Then you had debates going on also that women shouldn't be allowed to compete in weightlifting. They shouldn't be able to allowed in these events. So you still got the old side and just how society just normally is. Third day, the last day of lifting, we're in there and we're just watching. And this is the conclusion of the men's event. That's what it says over the microphone. And at that point, you see them run up, put some like lighter technique weights and technique bars on there. It's still a live broadcast, so millions are watching. And then you see these two, this 8-year-old girl and this 6-year-old girl that were crying 2 days before because they were forced out of the building, lift on the platform live on TV for the first time in history of that country. And also, women's sports are rarely, if ever, shown on TV. Now these girls just became national heroes. And that's the trip there.
That's, I mean, that's a lot more than, what social media shows. So I'm actually glad that we're having this conversation, because you can only obviously say and show so much through posts on Facebook or Instagram. But that's, I mean, that's revolutionary.
No,
It's
and that's the word it was. It was a revolution. It was just like, hey, it was once they gave approval for my coach to coach me just like she would anywhere else, that right there was going to conjure up added motivation to their movement that's already happening, that's been happening. And it was like, you know what? Now, even though, of course, if you're a woman, of course you should think that you should be able to do whatever you want to do. But now, not only, let's say if you were a woman and you wanted to just coach females, like a female weightlifter. Well, before this year, you haven't been allowed to compete. But now you see a female coaching a male, and now that's way more than what you were even going for. And now you're like, hold on, wait a minute now. Not only do we want to, of course, coach females, and hopefully this year we're going to see Iranian women be on the platform competing. So I think we're going to see that. But now, seeing my myself and my coach's dynamic, they might say, "Hey, we should be able to coach whoever we want to coach." And in any sport, we should be able to go watch males. Now, women that want to go watch male sporting events might say, "Hey, wait a minute now. The Americans were here, and now women were allowed to go watch a male weightlifting event. We should be able to go to soccer stadiums now."
So speaking of the dynamic between you and Ursula, how did you guys get together, and how is it, because like you mentioned, you're a international weightlifting coach for Team USA, level 5. She's the top of the top.
So it's funny with us, we're actually both level 5 coaches,
Exactly. She was the
both
first female,
eligible as yeah. So she was the first female. At the time, she was the youngest to get it, and she was the first female in USA weightlifting history to get her level 5. And then when I got it, I think I got it 5 years earlier than when she got hers. So I got mine at 27. So I became the youngest level 5, or I'm still the youngest level 5 in USA weightlifting history. Then I also became the first African American level 5 in USA weightlifting history. So I've been competing for 15 years in 2012. And when Linda Wood decided to make a coaching change, I was just trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And then I had and at that year, I had a guy make the Olympics, Fernando Reis of Brazil. And so I actually recruited him to the United States at 19 years old. And then he just got crazy successful at that gym. And he would actually live and train in St. Louis year round, where the program was and where I lived. And when they decided to make a coaching change, I had to figure out what I wanted to do. Did I want to even be a part of the sport anymore? And after like getting through that and trying to pick myself up and get over that disappointment, embarrassment, it's like, you know what? What if I moved to Los Angeles? If I could do half of the stuff I did here, I think I would be pretty, I think I would be okay.
Do you like saving money on your car insurance for being a good driver? Well, guess what? Health IQ saves you money on your life insurance for living a healthy, conscious lifestyle. People who train, work out, and eat healthy shouldn't have to pay as much for life insurance. It's that simple. The training we already do can save us 25% on our life insurance. That's because people like us who exercise have 56% lower risk of heart disease, 34% lower risk of all-cause mortality, and 22% lower risk of cancer. These savings are exclusive to Health IQ, and to learn more and get a free quote, head over to healthiq.com/uncharted.
So at that point, I moved to Los Angeles,
Did you have any kind
sold my car,
of
packed two suitcases, one-way ticket. And so I sold my car so I could have some money to even think about living out here for a month or two and just roll the dice. Let's see what happens. And
Did you have any connections in
I
LA?
knew no weightlifters out
Okay.
here. I knew no one. I just knew one guy that I'd known for about a decade. It was like
Okay.
one guy in Santa Monica. And so I ended up moving to Santa Monica. And it was just like just starting over and just trying to, I don't know, seek peace at that point.
Got it.
And so at that point, I learned more about nutrition and healing the body through food. I went to a more anti-inflammatory style way of eating because the gym that I had researched for months, they had boasted about the success of the patients that they were having and alleviating pain. And at that point, I'd had multiple knee surgeries. I did a decade of from 17 to 27, a decade of prescription pills from ibuprofen, 800 milligrams of ibuprofen before each workout, to Vicodin, to muscle relaxers, cortisone injections, knees and back. So, and that was at that point, that was 15 years. So I said, you know what, let's just come out here and focus on coaching. Well, but I had made the changes, healed my body through food
Okay.
of a more keto style, high fat, lower carbs. And with carbs, you pretty much eliminate the inflammation. So carbs produce spikes in the blood sugar, glucose, and insulin. It creates the creation of that. And so by me lowering my carbs, I was able to lower the inflammation. And now, because I would always still train every day, now my body was feeling fantastic. Like it hadn't felt since I was like 15 years old. And I think I think before I went on the lifestyle change, the nutritional change, I reached out to Ursula and I was like, I think I'm gonna compete at the nationals this year, that being 2013. And I think I'm gonna be a 62, because I was a 69, and in St. Louis, I probably got up to like 75 kilos. And she was like, oh, I would be honored. Honored. Then I remember her making like an announcement, like, hey, oh, like on Facebook, which I didn't expect. And yeah, and so that was the start of it. But I saw her just throughout the years. I had competed against some of the lifters that she would help out coaching in the back room. When I was 18 or when I was 19 years old, I went to a training camp at the Olympic Training Center. She was one of the coaches out there. And then yeah, and throughout those years, I'd hung out with some of the lifters that she coached. And so I always knew about it, but we never really had like
Got it.
many one-on-one conversations. Always pleasant though when we saw each other and spoke. And then of course she writes all my programming and yeah, so we're just a team. We're like Batman and Robin. We're like Tom Brady and Bill Belichick.
Do you guys ever argue or disagree and say on programming or in competition, anything like that?
No arguments. I tell her like when she programs, I tell her if something irritates something,
Got
like,
it.
hey, if
Okay.
we keep doing these, and I've been feeling that, and she, and we always make adjustments. Like, I'm sure we disagree, like anybody else disagree, but it's all like conversation at this at this same tone that we're talking, that I'm talking with right now. There's never been any raised voice. There's never been any nasty thing said ever, like on either ends. And I think that's just all about the respect, and that's why we're together. That's why I love being an athlete of hers, because of respect. That's why she was the only coach I reached out to that I wanted to coach me into 2016. Well, now to 2020. Yeah, it was just no one I reached out to, and it was just all about respect, and it's always been reciprocated.
That's awesome. There's an older article that I came across, and I forget who I can attribute this quote to, but it was essentially, it said that we don't have enough Derricks.
That was Michael Whitmer. He was you may remember Jeff Whitmer.
Yes, yeah, a little bit,
Jeff
yeah.
Whitmer has used to live at the Olympic Training Center as an athlete. He won a national championship. He's made some international teams. Anyway, and that was his father, and we would go like train around the father. Father's also a chiropractor. And it was from an article back in 2012.
Yeah.
And it's funny, after that article, I was like, you know what? I got to start writing my own story. And if you have the longevity and you continue to win, you can write your own story. But yeah, he was just saying, and it was after that Lindenwood decided to make the change
Yeah, exactly.
at for head coach. And you have to remember that this was something that I created for my own mind, that I built, that I coach, that I recruited guys from all over the world. Like we've seen guys from so many different countries at that program. And it was just after that, and it was just, and or even before that, I started coaching at 19 at the same after school program that I started lifting at when I was 12 years old. And they know my passion in the sport. They know my they know my admiration for the younger generation, and trying to make opportunities for them. So that's what it was at the at Live for Life Gym in St. Louis when I started coaching. That's what it was at 24 years old when I created the first and only weightlifting program of its kind that gave scholarships and grants to kids all throughout the world, not just the United States. And so his statement was just, after the learning of the news of them bringing in a new coach and getting rid of me, it was like, that's shocking. And really, we need 1,000 Derrick Johnsons.
Yeah, and that speaks volumes, just
And
the
now the Kings of Weightlifting comes from that same, like, okay, we need 1,000 of Derrick Johnsons. And just out of that Lindenwood, it was just like trying to like figure out life again. Because it was like, you know what, a lot of these athletes that I was coaching, they switched to different coaches. I didn't have any answers for them. I was completely heartbroken, just torn apart by it. And so I didn't know what I was going to do. And then it was like, okay, you know what? I got my fire back. And his fire has been blazing ever since. And so now everything is just complete motivation to me. It's absolute motivation to me. And so all that, or even growing up in the city, inner city of St. Louis, just all the pain and trauma, I've always used that throughout the years. And just like a lot of the professional athletes you see, it's something like 70%, 67% come from ghettos.
You seem very laid back, and you do it again from an outsider's standpoint. You seem to channel the things that you just mentioned, the pain, the trauma, the injuries, the use of the meds, being devastated. You channel you seem to be able to channel that very well into in a positive way. What can
And so that's kind of what I that's kind of how I operate. I've like even when I moved here, I changed. Even when I moved to Los Angeles, I changed my number, and I just didn't associate with people that I associated with being having negative thoughts or just anything. It was like if I'm going to make it out here, I'm going to have the best mindset ever. And so I would just every day work on myself, train myself, listening to speeches, listening to successful athletes, successful people that have come from nothing. And it was just like, how do they do it? How does this work? Essentially rebuilding myself or maybe building myself for the first time to just love what I'm doing, appreciate what I'm doing, because it got to the point where it was like, you know what, you were coaching athletes, they disappeared, and I had to remind myself of the good things that I did in the past, become coaching, being a head coach for Team USA at 25 years old, coming from this program that was the program I came from in St. Louis. Right across the street was a crack house. Right across the street was a liquor store. The other street was a liquor store. And it was surrounded by the housing projects in one of the most violent areas in all of St. Louis. So this is what I've come through, come from. And so I had to remind myself of all the positive things. I graduated high school. That was a big deal, coming from where I come from. I graduated college with my political science degree. That's a big deal, coming from where I come from. So I had to remind myself, like, oh, you know what, you've done a lot of good things, and really just trying to build myself up, and that led to national championships, Pan-American teams, world championship teams, American records. I had attempted senior American records before, but I had never broken senior American records until after I was 29 years old, with my last being a few months ago, a month before I turned 33.
What impact do you think you've had on this sport? Because you've been at this for a while now. It's been, well, I think, 20 plus years.
So 21 years now. Yeah. Well, so just going back to the Live for Life gym in St. Louis, like my story for that little program, which was a little program. It's a big name in St. Louis now, but I would be on cameras from the age of 12 on up until my 20s when I was coaching. My story raised that program millions of dollars. So you even have kids that are 16, 17 years old right now representing that team, making international trips, making youth international teams. So even right now, my name still lives on. And those kids follow me and all those things. So you got that. I remember I went in my freshman year, I went down and trained at LSUS in Shreveport. And from that program, you have a person that would make a few Olympics, Kendrick Ferris.
Yeah.
But what a lot of people don't know is I won at that program, I became the first junior national champion, the first senior national champion, collegiate national champion, collegiate record holder. And for me going down there, I created the out-of-state tuition waiver, or helped create the out-of-state tuition waiver. So now you would have dozens of students go to that school because that exists. Then the Lindenwood program, creating, you probably had 50 kids go there by now, go to Lindenwood for weightlifting from all around the world. Now you have the Kings of Weightlifting. I also talk a lot on my social media about nutrition, healing the body through food, the elimination of chemicals, the elimination of prescription pills of any kind, movement prep, eliminating sit-ups, eliminating crunches, adding in functional core exercises, doing glute activation, doing shoulder thoracic activation. So I think those are the things I'll be remembered from. Coming from... I spent my entire childhood on Section 8 and food stamps. My mother had seven kids. And so that's the story that I hope people remember there. It's like this guy he just kept getting hit by life, and he kept going forward. So hopefully they remember some of those things and throughout their process, senior level, international coach, and I was going back to 2012. I was just exhausted. It was like they made that change. And I just couldn't believe it. I was just completely exhausted. I felt that I was doing all the things correct, and here I am still in this position. How did this happen? But now I'm in like LA now. I completely love it. And my love for the city is me opening up the Kings of Weightlifting. My love for the upcoming generation is the Kings of Weightlifting. Justice. So, or even if you think of Kings of Weightlifting, think of the word justice, because a senior international coach, level five, is not going to go and give his services up for free. Well, the Kings of Weightlifting, the kids go there for free.
Yeah.
Not only that, I pay for their shoes, membership fees, entry fees, travel.
You mentioned that you're still writing your story, so I think we still have some left. We still have a little bit left to go.
So after the article that you mentioned from the quote from, I didn't like how some of the things were written in there. But I was like, you know what? I'm gonna get a lot more opportunities to write this story.
No, and there's plenty of time left too. Yeah,
or even like a couple of years ago when I was the feature on this ESPN. Broadcast for weightlifting, like the first time weightlifting is featured on ESPN, and I'm the feature weightlifter, and I'm telling my story, and it was just beautiful. So,
no, and thank you again for letting me do this and share this story, this kind of in process story with our audience, because I don't think a lot of people have heard this stuff before, especially the our community. What is more rewarding for you, competing for the U.S. or coaching for the U.S.?
Well, because that's funny, because I've been asked this question over a decade, and it's funny because now I feel like I can go forever as an athlete. Of course, I know I'm 33, but when you study people like Kobe Bryant and Tom Brady in theirs, and I tell people, well, Kobe retired at 37. I'm younger than LeBron, so. Let's just ask me a different question than about my athletics and how long I'm going to live. But so going back to like I was 23 and I had already had a knee surgery, then I would have another one soon after that. So I was always transitioning into coaching.
Okay.
And especially coaching where I was coaching in the inner city, it was just such a rewarding experience. To see just the kids coming from where they come from and go, we went all around the country. I've been all, even in my early 20s, I was all around the world coaching. But now I realize, or now I see that, you know what, you can push your platform even better as an athlete. So, and just being in LA, when you tell somebody, yeah, I'm the national champion or American record holder, you're treated like a star. And so, and as me, as being an athlete, I'm able to get more attention. And now Kings of Weightlifting can get more attention. But that's not to take away from the every day I walk in there. Two months, the Kings of Weightlifting has been open. And you walk in there like, these kids never heard of Olympic weightlifting, never saw it before they started doing it. They got some really good looking snatches going on, really good looking clean and jerks going on. And just, you smile every day going to the gym, you smile every day leaving the gym.
What do you think the future of Olympic weightlifting is as a sport? Where do you think we're going? Where do you think this is headed? Because there's been some, especially at the international level, there's been some kind of discouraging news in terms of spots.
This sport should have been cleaned up so long ago.
Uh-huh.
Olympic weightlifting, the number one most failed drug test in Olympic history. Yeah. Like, I'm talking raw numbers, like total numbers. If we went just percentage-wise, it would be even worse. Or and so just for decades, the IWF has just allowed these things to happen. From because each and what I mean by that, each country is responsible for drug testing themselves. Well, if the Chinese government pays the Chinese athletes, who the government also pays the Drug Testing Federation, Drug Testing Federation, they're not going to make themselves fail. Like, that just wouldn't make sense, which is what you saw with all the revelations from Russia. They're all funded by the same people. And so in the United States, the United States Anti-Doping Agency is not funded by the government.
Yeah, a separate entity, yeah.
Right. So it's completely separate entities. And so the government is not telling them to throw away our tests so we can go win medals. And as you saw the emergence of performance-enhancing drugs, steroids, growth hormones, and everything else between, you saw the decline, almost the elimination of Americans winning medals. So right at the outset of it, you saw the elimination decline of Americans winning, even up until this point, to the point where the last two Olympics we qualified for one spot. So we play by the rules and we come out with one spot total. I'm not talking about one spot for each weight class.
There's one
One
spot,
spot
yeah.
total. And then if you look at my results for the last from really 2013 to 2016, you'll see he had some of the best results out there. Didn't go to the Olympics. I mean, every competition I was attempting records, breaking records or breaking records, making international teams, didn't go. So the last two Olympics, one spot for the males. That's unbelievable.
Yeah, do you think we can turn that around? I mean, in the U.S., it seems like the sport is growing, and it's
Oh,
heading in a
the
positive
sport
direction.
is the sport is bigger than it's ever been.
Yeah.
And actually, I don't think our sport is, of course, everybody, you want to make the Olympics. And of course, what you're referring to is the 2024 being in jeopardy of the sport being in jeopardy of being taken off,
Yeah.
because the International Olympic Committee, that's exactly what they said, that the sport is in jeopardy of being taken off because the drug tests are just embarrassing. They went back and they retested the 2008 and 2012 Olympic samples of all sports. And of course, weightlifting led the pack. And then, of course, the IOC also said a guy that was probably known as the most notable international weightlifter, the Kazakhstanian weightlifter
Yeah,
in the
Ilya, yeah.
94 kilogram class,
Yeah.
they said, "We want him gone." Do you know this guy will return at the end of this year? That number one, the only request they had besides cleaning up, they said, "We want this exact guy right here gone. He failed the 2008 and the 2012 Olympics. He will return this year." And it's either clean up or go out. And have they made the changes?
We don't know, right?
I haven't. Yeah, I guess we'll see. I guess we'll see when all the paperwork comes out. But I personally haven't seen much.
Okay. So
And my suggestions would be, of course, drug testing for synthetic testosterone, which none of the tests don't test for that. Because of course, a lot of these guys just cycle off. And it just clears their system. Or have WADA be the World Anti-Doping Agency be the actual drug tester instead of the Chinese Drug Testing Federation or the Russian Drug Testing Association, which is decertified right now.
Yeah, I think there's a there, it, I it wasn't related to weightlifting, but there's actually a great documentary that came out recently regarding the Russian doping scandal on Netflix. Yeah.
But the funny thing is, it wasn't necessarily about weightlifting, but the Russian weightlifters had more failed drug tests than the other sports. So that's still another funny part about it. That's like that if weightlifting was bigger, like that demanded ESPN attention every night, it would be a bloodbath.
So hopefully internationally, on the international stage, I'm hoping that, you know, weightlifting can come back to the glory days. And I think, you know, individuals like yours.
But besides that, I think whether that happens or not with 2024, Olympic weightlifting in the United States is going to be good. Yeah. It's only getting bigger. Like, it is only getting bigger. So maybe there will be a 2024 Olympics. Maybe there won't. But our national championships are going to be bigger. The American Opens are going to be bigger. There's going to be more competitions than ever. There's going to be millions more lifting in a couple years, in a few years. So the sport is only growing.
So
domestically.
So with that said, let's say we have there's a new kid. Let's say boy, girl, doesn't matter, or just, you know, somebody like a teenager that's interested in trying the sport, and they're a little hesitant. And they come to you and ask you, why should I join a weightlifting club? Why should I try Olympic weightlifting? Why should I pursue this as a sport?
Well, I would say just give you a activity to do. A lot of places, especially after school, kids are just hanging out. Mm-hmm. Hanging out, the years passing by, and there was nothing that kept them compete more in this society, especially in the area I'm talking about where the King of Weightlifting is located. Or a lot of after-school programs, you come out and you just play board games, you play video games. That's not we can do a little bit more than that. But I just talk about the athletic performance of weightlifting. Actually, I just had a conversation with someone last year, and I was telling her that she joined the weightlifting team. I believe you could see the state of California. You could see the country, maybe even one day see the world, and just open up more opportunities for you to see and just open up your creative processes. And even when I have people come down and train at the Kings of Weightlifting, it's all different walks of life. So instead of just seeing people that you're familiar with seeing in that particular community, you see people that were on TV, people that are athletes, people that are doctors, people that are teachers. You just see different things. And it's all about just expanding the horizons. And if you enjoy the process of it, hey, come back tomorrow, train again. So that's kind of how I would put it there.
Very cool, very cool. And it's a beautiful sport. I mean, it's beautiful to watch. It's beautiful to train. So I'm gonna try to wrap it up, and I'm going to bring it back to the beginning, into what we started in terms of Kings of Weightlifting. How can we, the audience, and anybody listening, support Kings of Weightlifting?
So the audience can go to kingsofweightlifting.com, kingsofweightlifting.com. You can make a donation there, and that's probably our number one goal right now. I'm raising money for competitions this year. So that's the number one funding goal right there, competitions and uniforms. And so whatever comes in there, that's how I'll base on where we go this year. And we'll keep moving forward that way. And so actually we just got a bunch of shoes in there. So we pretty much got dozens of shoes now. So I just checked that one off the list there. And so that was great that the community came through like that, brand new shoes. So that was really good there. And so now the next mission is competitions.
And what is next for you personally?
So in 7 weeks, I compete at the Pan American Championships in the Dominican Republic. So I'll be the first male to lift for Team USA. So I got to start everything off with a bang. So I got to get everything ready to go. And so that's what's next for me. I didn't finish it off this year at the World Championships.
Beautiful. And I lost count in terms of how many firsts we talked about in the last hour or so. But where can people find you on social media, or if they where can they reach out to you?
So you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube for Derek.
Okay.
So pretty Instagram simple. / for Derek or at for Derek.
Got it.
For the number 4, DERRICK.
And as always, we're going to link that up in the show notes for folks to see.
Awesome. Also, you can follow the Kings of Weightlifting also.
Yeah, because there's a separate account for that too. Yeah.
Yeah, so there's a separate account for that. So it's at the Kings of Weightlifting. That's on Instagram or Facebook there.
Okay, beautiful. Derek, it's been an honor. Like I said, it was a fanboy hour, not a moment. it's pretty unreal to get to talk to some of you kind of I don't want to say grow up because I'm older than you, but kind of grow up in the sport, watching and learning from. So thank you for taking the time. I really appreciate it, man.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Another amazing episode in the books, fam. If you enjoyed the episode, please take a moment to leave a rating and review on iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play. If you are new to the show, don't be afraid to check out other episodes. And if you dig the content, go ahead and hit that subscribe button. If you ever have any questions, feedback, or you just want to hit us up, please don't hesitate. Email address is contact@unchartedperformance, or you can hit me up directly at powell@unchartedperformance.com. Facebook and Instagram at Uncharted Performance, and if Twitter is your thing, at Reach Uncharted. And give us a follow and tag us to let us know who and where you are. As always, thank you for listening and supporting the podcast, and talk to you next week. Cheers, guys.